trying to overturn the election by threatening to hold Congress hostage. What has that been like for you in this last 30 seconds?
I start to feel that trouble just follows me, or I follow it no matter where I go, which is actually, I think, the first line of my book. But yeah, it just seems like we're in a world that's in disarray. Everything is discombobulated, and no one seems to want to take responsibility for how their actions have impacted our society and our culture and our politics. And it is pervasive. It is everywhere. It's here in D.C. It's in Florida. It's at the highest levels of government, literally, in this country. And I'm just in shock that everywhere in this country is experiencing this kind of sickness of the soul.
Rebecca Jones, and we're going to have to leave it there, but we will continue to talk to you, we hope, in the future. Founder of Florida COVID Action, data scientist and whistleblower. I'm Amy Goodman. Stay safe. Wear a mask. Wearing a mask is an act of love.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Ever wonder what happens to your Fred Meyer reward points? Now you can turn them into excellent community radio by linking your Fred Meyer rewards card to KBOO. Look up KBOO or our ID number 86634 at fredmeyer.com/community rewards. Every time you use your card, KBOO will get money. Your rebates, discounts, and gas bonuses are unaffected. With your Fred Meyer reward card, you can even turn cat litter into support for KBOO. Go to fredmeyer.com/community rewards, all one word, and link your card to KBOO.
Meow.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the vice chairperson of Oregon Young Republicans was arrested during the Washington, D.C. insurrection. Police declared a riot in Tigard yesterday, and Governor Brown provided an update on vaccines and school openings during today's press conference. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, January 8th, 2021. I'm Nat Moon. Earlier today, Oregon Representative Suzanne Bonamici joined Earl Blumenauer and Peter DeFazio in calling for the immediate removal of President Donald Trump from office. The calls come less than 48 hours after Wednesday's storming of the U.S. Capitol by a mob of Trump extremists who were encouraged to take action by the president. With just 12 days left in his term, the president finds himself under increasing pressure to resign or face the possibility of becoming the first president to be impeached twice. Trump has even lost the support of the conservative editorial board at the Wall Street Journal, who called for his immediate resignation in an editorial published Thursday online. And in a development that could follow Trump after he leaves office, top Washington, D.C. prosecutors are saying they will look closely at anyone involved in Wednesday's insurrection, not just those who entered the Capitol building. In a letter to Democratic members of the House earlier today, Speaker Nancy Pelosi called on the president to resign and said the House will vote on articles of impeachment on Monday. She reminded congressional Republicans of their actions during the final days of the Nixon administration and said, quote, "Today, following the president's dangerous and seditious acts, Republicans in Congress need to follow that example and call on Trump to depart his office immediately," end quote. Since the Wednesday debacle, the Trump administration has been hemorrhaging staffers trying to distance themselves in the 11th hour. In addition to senior intelligence staffers, Transportation Secretary Elaine Chao, Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, and former Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney and current U.S. envoy to Ireland have bailed on Trump. But most observers believe the last-minute exit will prove to be seen as too little, too late to save their reputations. The vice chairperson of the Young Republicans of Oregon was arrested for participating in the riot at the U.S. Capitol building on Wednesday. Christina Malamon of Portland was charged with unlawful entry and curfew violations. Court documents state that the 28-year-old Portlander, quote, did enter or attempt to enter the U.S. Capitol grounds at 7:15 p.m. on Wednesday. This was over an hour after the 6 p.m. curfew that had been imposed by Washington Mayor Muriel Bowser. The documents go on to say that Malamon repeatedly ignored orders to disperse and was arrested along with five other women, including 54-year-old Yevgenia Malamon, also from Oregon. The two women pleaded not guilty at their arraignment yesterday and were ordered to stay out of Washington until their June court date. The Young Republicans' social media posts showed her at the Trump rally prior to the mob's storming of the Capitol building. In the post, she's seen wishing President Trump's son, Eric, a happy birthday. Previously, Malamon had posted pictures of herself posing with Trump supporter and self-proclaimed political dirty trickster Roger Stone. She was reportedly also one of the organizers of the August Trump boat rally that resulted in the sinking of a family boat as the ralliers sped along the Willamette in downtown Portland. Oregon U.S. Attorney Billy Williams has promised to prosecute those who participated in Wednesday's insurrection. In a statement, Williams said, quote, I join my fellow U.S. attorneys in unequivocally stating that if we learn of any Oregonians who traveled to participate in this violence, they will be prosecuted in the District of Oregon to the fullest extent of the law. Rodney Taylor of Bandon, Oregon, was also arrested for curfew violation in D.C. on Wednesday. In a Facebook post, Taylor is reported to have stated that he climbed the Capitol stairs with other protesters, but wasn't involved in the breaking down of barricades or forcing entrance into the building. He went on to state that he didn't condone the violence or the breaking down of doors and was reported to say that he did his best to discourage those actions. The Pacific Northwest has numerous alt-right groups with a history of actions similar to those seen in Washington on Wednesday. For more on the story, here's Eric Tegedoff of the Oregon News Service. Governor Kate Brown held an 11 a.m. press conference today to update the state's residents on the status of vaccine distribution and the plans to reopen the state's school system. She started off by applauding the continued efforts by Oregonians to minimize the spread of COVID-19, noting that the state continues to have one of the lowest infection and mortality rates in the country. She then spoke about the challenges of vaccine distribution and the continuing effort to get to a vaccination rate of 12,000 residents per day.
On the vaccine front, we're making steady progress toward achieving our goal of 12,000 vaccines administered per day. This is an all hands on deck effort. OHA is working with healthcare providers, pharmacies, and local public health partners to achieve this goal. For example, hospitals like OHSU have stepped up to help vaccinate harder to reach frontline workers, such as our home healthcare workers, behavioral health, and other local providers and first responders. We continue to look at how we can use every single tool we have to swiftly vaccinate Oregonians. And in that spirit, I've asked General Prendergast to support and coordinate distribution efforts with local public health. We are deploying the National Guard to provide vaccination support, starting this weekend with Salem Health's vaccination event at the State Fairgrounds. Our Guard members will be providing logistical and nursing support. The goal is to vaccinate 250 people per hour, vaccinating thousands of Oregonians. These partnerships and creative thinking are how we do it in Oregon. And it's how we're going to achieve that critical mass of community immunity we need.
Brown then spoke about efforts to reopen the state's schools, indicating that the decisions would be made by local school boards. Here she is.
On the educational front, at the start of the new year, Oregon's COVID-19 health metrics for returning to in-person instruction became advisory, empowering local school districts and communities to make decisions regarding in-person instruction that best meet the needs of their families and their students. And while I've prioritized educators from early learning to high school to be next in line to receive the vaccine, we've seen across the world how schools can reopen with rigorous health protocols in place. All Oregon schools will still be required to adhere to health and safety measures in order to open any in-person instruction, and they must continue to work in close consultation with their local public health authority.
Brown concluded her remarks by expressing a continued concern about the possibility of another surge resulting from holiday and New Year's get-togethers. Patrick Allen, director of the Oregon Health Authority, pointed out that to date, Oregon has received 250,000 doses of the vaccine, and 73,000 individuals have received their first dose. On Thursday, the U.S. passed a grim milestone, recording 4,085 deaths from COVID-19 in just one day. It's the first time that the daily toll has exceeded 4,000 and continues an upward trend that experts directly link to the holidays and New Year's celebrations. Today's number from the Oregon Health Authority reported 1,755 new cases and 7 more deaths, bringing the state's total to nearly 123,000 infected and 1,575 deaths. All of the deaths reported today were associated with people who had underlying conditions. Their ages were between 50 and 91 years old. Despite those sobering numbers, the daily average has dropped 9% over the last 2 weeks, and Oregon continues to have one of the lowest case and mortality rates in the country. Tigard police declared a riot and arrested one person following a demonstration to protest a fatal shooting by a Tigard police officer yesterday. According to reports, approximately 100 protesters gathered to march to the Tigard police station at about 8:30 p.m. last night. There were several reports of vandalism, and photographers documented numerous instances of broken windows and graffiti, both along the route of the march and at the police station. The gathering was declared an unlawful assembly at about 9 p.m. The protest was sparked by the shooting death of 26-year-old Jacob McDuff. McDuff was shot and killed by one of the Tigard police officers who were responding to a domestic violence call on Wednesday afternoon. According to the police, McDuff was sitting in his car armed with a knife and refused to be taken into custody. The incident is under investigation by the Washington County Major Crimes Team. Despite vowing to take a harder line on vandalism related to Portland's ongoing protest, it now appears that Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler is reconsidering that position. In his immediate response to vandalism and property damage that occurred downtown on December 30th and 31st, Wheeler said that he was going to ask the state legislature to make changes to Oregon's laws relating to property damage during protests. He reiterated that position at a January 1st press conference. But a review of the Portland City Council's state legislative agenda for the 2021 regular session did not show any proposals related to such crimes. The legislative agenda was approved on Wednesday and shows the City Council's priorities for the next session. In a statement on Thursday, Wheeler said, quote, "I continue to be deeply concerned about repeated acts of vandalism and violence within the city. I'm in conversations with my colleagues on council and others about the best approach to address the challenge." The mayor went on to say that he believed that people who destroy property should meet with the owners of businesses they vandalize and repair damage or clean up graffiti themselves. He said, quote, "People who engage in intimidation, violence, or criminal destruction must be held accountable for the harm they are causing, no matter what their ideology." The mayor was scheduled to meet with local, state, and federal law enforcement agencies this morning to discuss specific actions to address the vandalism. Oregonians appear to have found at least one way to pass those long days of pandemic lockdown. According to data from the Oregon Liquor Control Board, sales of marijuana exceeded $1 billion statewide in 2020. The board oversees cannabis sales in Oregon. The data indicates that the growth in cannabis sales directly correlated to Governor Kate Brown's stay-at-home order, jumping by 20% in March. Sales reached $100 million in May and hit a high of over $106 million in July. The 2020 record exceeded sales in 2019 by more than $200 million and will net the state nearly $150 million in tax revenue. Listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines. Host Janine Jackson breaks down the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol and talks about the role the police played that day. Then stay tuned at 6 for Let's Talk About Race. Tonight's weather will be partly cloudy with an overnight low of 35 degrees. Partly cloudy skies continue tomorrow with a daytime high of 48 degrees. Today in history, in 2011, sitting U.S. Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords was shot in the head, along with 18 others in a mass shooting in Tucson, Arizona. Giffords survived the assassination attempt, but 6 others sadly died. The quote of the day is from Giffords, who said, quote, "The safety of the world, in some sense, depends on your saying no to inhumane ideas. Standing up for one's own integrity makes you no friends. It is costly. Yet defiance of the mob, in the service of that which is right, is one of the highest expressions of courage I know." In the wake of Wednesday's riot in Washington, D.C., congressional leaders are calling for impeachment or implementation of the 25th Amendment. With more on that story and others, it's Laura Rosbro-Tellum with 2021 Talks.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we track the transition in uncharted territory.
By inciting sedition, as he did yesterday, he must be removed from office. While it's only 13 days left, any day can be a horror show for America.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and others call for Vice President Mike Pence to invoke the 25th Amendment and remove President Donald Trump from office for inciting violence at the Capitol on Tuesday. Illinois Representative Adam Kinzinger was the first Republican to say Trump must resign or be removed, calling him unmoored now from reality. The Wall Street Journal is calling for him to step down. Cabinet members Betsy DeVos and Elaine Chao resigned yesterday. Reportedly, Pence and other cabinet officials are against invoking the 25th, which means likely the only other option is another House impeachment process. Back on Twitter last night, Trump posted a video admitting only, for the first time, that there would be a new administration come January 20th. How his acknowledgement affects proceedings against him is unclear. The National Task Force on Election Crises issued a statement calling for Trump's removal now, for the safety of the country. On a press briefing, Ohio State University law professor Ned Foley explained that impeachment can happen now or later. If both chambers of Congress approve an impeachment, Trump couldn't run for office again.
You can impeach a federal office holder after they've left office. There are two constitutional penalties upon conviction in an impeachment situation. One is removal when the office holder is still in office. The other constitutionally designated penalty is disqualification from further office.
The U.S. Justice Department said yesterday they would not rule out charging Trump with inciting violence. Former Attorney General and ardent Trump supporter William Barr said the president's conduct betrayed his office. Biden's nominee for Attorney General, Merrick Garland, signaled that under his leadership, the Justice Department would avoid politics. Here, he quotes former Attorney General Ed Leavy.
Nothing can more weaken the quality of life or more imperil the realization of the goals we all hold dear than our failure to make clear by words and deed that our law is not the instrument of partisan purpose.
But failure to hold Trump and others accountable for inciting violence has consequences, says Rachel Kleinfeld, senior fellow at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace.
I would say that we're on a rising trend and that there are inflection points. And I think what we saw yesterday was an inflection point where if there is significant legal accountability, you might see violence go down. But if there is not that kind of accountability quite swiftly, you'll see this as a win, and wins lead to more recruitment.
The Capitol Police Chief will resign, said a spokesperson yesterday. The House Sergeant-at-Arms already has, and Senate Minority Leader Democrat Chuck Schumer says he'll fire the Senate Sergeant-at-Arms if he hasn't resigned by January 20th. Michelle Obama entered the debate, calling on social media companies to stop enabling Trump and ban him permanently. He's currently banned on Facebook, Instagram, and Snapchat indefinitely. For Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Laura Ross-Bartellum. Thanks for listening.
Civil rights groups are calling for an investigation into the police handling of the riots in Washington, D.C. on Wednesday. For more on that, here's Andrea Sears with the Public News Service.
Civil rights advocates say the police response to a violent attack on the U.S. Capitol by supporters of President Donald Trump was in stark contrast to responses to peaceful civil rights protests. Pro-Trump rioters easily breached barricades and forced their way into the Capitol building itself on Wednesday, ransacking offices with impunity for hours before being forced to leave the building. Reports have said the rioters got inside because U.S. Capitol police were outnumbered and overwhelmed. But according to Mara Verheiden-Hilliard with the Center for Protest Law and Litigation, peaceful civil rights protests have been confronted by massive and often violent police response.
When confronted with an actually violent mob that they knew was coming, they fell back. They did little to try and stop them from entering.
Chief Stephen Sund, head of the Capitol Police, has defended the response, saying officers acted valiantly when faced with thousands of individuals involved in violent, riotous acts. Video from inside the Capitol does show rioters violently confronting police who do appear to be overwhelmed. But Verheiden-Hilliard points out that other videos tell another story.
There's a lot of images circulating now that show police taking selfies with the white supremacists who entered the Capitol, who besieged it, and them opening up and very calmly stepping back from barricades.
She adds that Capitol Police have dressed in full riot gear to confront peaceful anti-war and civil rights protests, but wore soft uniforms as thousands of violent rioters approached. Verheiden-Hilliard notes that federal prosecutors and the FBI are convening grand juries to pursue federal riot charges against racial justice demonstrators, while rioters who stormed the Capitol were allowed to walk away.
It demonstrates the falsity of the criminal justice system because it makes it clear that they are using these laws to target the social justice movement that has nothing to do with, quote unquote, law and order.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has called for Sun to resign, and late Thursday it was announced that the chief would leave his post January 16th. For Public News Service, I'm Andrea Sears.
After seeing the police behavior during the D.C. riots, Native people couldn't help but notice how differently they're treated than white people in the United States. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Native people say there are double standards in the way they're treated by law enforcement after watching largely white President Trump supporters violently storm the U.S. Capitol Wednesday. People in Indian country took to social media pointing out differences at Standing Rock in 2016 when Native people and their allies were blasted by water cannons and shot with rubber bullets by law enforcement in tactical gear. Others shared photos of Greg Graycloud being removed from the Senate in 2014. He was arrested when he sang an honor song after a pipeline bill was defeated. Here's Graycloud in a Facebook Live video.
When we sang the song in a Senate gallery that time in the Capitol building, we had Senate passes from our senators. We had passes to be in that building. To be exactly where I was sitting, I had a pass. I had permission to be there. You look at what happened yesterday. Ain't nobody had no permission sitting in no VP's chair. That was disrespectful.
Nick Tilson, president and CEO of Indian Collective, is facing up to 16 years in prison for felony and misdemeanor charges, which include allegedly stealing a police shield during a land back action in July 2020, leading up to President Trump's visit to Mount Rushmore. Tilson says when indigenous people mobilize, they're met with militarization, police brutality, and over-prosecution.
We stand up for our land and we stand up for our rights. And, you know, to sit back and watch a group of white people, you know, some with guns, basically, you know, walk into the doors of the Capitol is crazy. It exemplifies white supremacy and white privilege in society today.
Tilson says there's also a sharp contrast between what happened at the Capitol and actions by indigenous people.
We come from a movement that we're accountable to. And indigenous people and indigenous communities, we're accountable to our people, we're accountable to our actions, and we're accountable to much of our ceremonies and the things that ground us and make us, you know, connected to our identity. And to quite frankly, connected to the very things that we're fighting for. That's why we engage in nonviolent direct action. It's why we engage in direct action. It's why we take direct action. Whenever we take direct action, we always infuse parts of our identity and our culture and our ceremony.
And it's not just indigenous people seeing a disparity. Images of Black Lives Matter protests are being shared. President-elect Joe Biden, in remarks and on social media, weighed in Thursday, saying no one can tell me that if it had been a group of Black Lives Matter protesters yesterday, they wouldn't have been treated very differently than the mob of thugs who stormed the Capitol. Meanwhile, Republican Oklahoma Congressman Mark Wayne Mullen, a citizen of the Cherokee Nation, insists the violent riot at the U.S. Capitol was spurred by a small group of what he calls antagonizers. Mullen spoke to Oklahoma TV station KOCO News 5 before the building was completely secured. Mullen says he spoke to some of the officers injured when the protesters forced their way into the Capitol.
And I didn't just hear it once, I heard it multiple times. They said there was a group that broke away from the protesters. And when they broke away, they had, quote, evil in their eyes. That was the antagonizers. That's the ones that came in and did this destruction. These weren't the your normal Trump supporters. And these were a different group of individuals that came there to cause trouble.
Mullen also told the TV station neither he nor Donald Trump bear any responsibility for inciting those who participated in the violence. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Groups are calling for the removal of a recently elected West Virginia lawmaker who posted images of himself participating in the pro-Trump riot in Washington on Wednesday. For more on that story, here's Diane Bernard with the Public News Service.
West Virginia social justice groups are decrying a state delegate's participation in the shocking assault on the U.S. Capitol building Wednesday, while Mountain State lawmakers are calling for the delegate's removal from the legislature. Wearing a motorcycle helmet and shouting Trump's name, newly elected Republican Derek Evans recorded his participation with pro-Trump supporters who stormed the Capitol, gaining illegal entry and destroying property. State House Minority Leader Doug Scaff says House leaders are investigating Evans' actions. He points out that wearing a helmet is one of many indicators that Evans was prepared to riot.
I believe Derek Evans presents a security issue, a safety issue, and a problem within our members. His conduct is just not to the standards of what a legislator and elected official of the state of West Virginia represents, and we will be pushing forward to move him as soon as possible from his position.
Evans posted on Twitter that he was in the nation's capital as an independent member of the media. As of late Thursday, more than 33,000 people signed a change.org petition asking the state legislature to remove Evans from his seat for going against the Constitution and the rule of law. Rick Wilson with the West Virginia chapter of the American Friends Service Committee agrees with Scaff that Evans' behavior is unacceptable for a state official. He says participants in the rampage represent the politics of division we've seen over the past 4 years.
For years now, people in power have tried to inflame a sense of white grievance and to divide people to create a climate of hatred and scapegoating for their own power and profit, and this creates a climate conducive to white supremacy and violence.
Evans was sworn into office last month to represent Wayne County. The West Virginia legislature is set to reconvene for one day next Wednesday before the session starts on February 10th. For Public News Service, I'm Diane Bernard.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, January 8th, 2021. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote producer for tonight's newscast is Ray Bodwell, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Andrea Sears, Antonia Gonzalez, Diane Bernard, Laura Rosbro-Tellum, and Eric Tegedoff. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Nat Moon. Stay safe, wear a mask.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.